Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. I always love to hear from you, and you will find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up, what does it mean to live more intuitively? And how endemic is disordered eating in today's society? I'll be finding out from coach Cara O'Loughlin. Gabor Mate is bringing his Healing from Trauma workshop to Dublin's RDS later this month. I'll be meeting the lady who's bringing him here and hoping to change the mental health conversation for our young people. And we'll also be getting the latest in health and wellness news with Emer Daly. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, on a personal note, it's been a great week. But I'd have to say the world does feel quite heavy right now. If you've been feeling it too, I'm sending the love your way. We seem to be back in an unprecedented time. There hasn't been another time in history when we have had footage of war essentially arriving into our phones in real time. And it's challenging not only to bear witness to that, but also to know what to do with what we are seeing, to recognise our role, our voice, our navigating of it all. And something I've really been witnessing lately is judgment of who is doing what, who is doing enough, who is not doing enough, what the right or wrong way to react is. And it sort of reminds me of our other unprecedented time, the pandemic, in that the sentiment of judgment was around then. And I don't want to enter into the irony that I am judging others for judgment, but I really do feel that in both situations, the anger is often misplaced. Somebody not posting is not the perpetrator or indeed the victim in this instance. All we can do is do what feels right for us. I do, of course, believe in using your voice and speaking up for injustice and pushing for change from grassroots up, for sure. But again, that's me. Let's have understanding for others and continue to hope for a world where peace, diplomacy and respect for all is paramount. Now, last week on the show, I was joined by Ellen Coyne, the journalist who wrote for Life magazine in the Sunday Independent about the skyrocketing price of baby formula, and that we can't seem to have a proper discussion about why these prices are going for such an essential product, because it then gets reduced into, again, more judgment over how people choose to feed their babies. I was also joined by paediatrician and neonatologist Afif Al-Kufash, and he would also like a more balanced discussion around formula feeding. And so many of you got in contact with me after to say you felt judgment for bottle feeding your baby, for even breastfeeding your baby, or that you didn't get the support necessary. So it's very hard for people to demonise one way of feeding when the support isn't there in the first place. But again, that comes down, that's bringing it down and reducing it to bottle feeding versus breastfeeding, which isn't tackling why it's so expensive to buy baby formula now. One person got in touch to say, I chose to bottle feed and the hospital kept changing my file to breastfeed. It was absolutely infuriating. Another says, I learned last week that infant formula isn't eligible for vouchers off in my local supermarket. Was really surprised by that. I was really surprised by that as well, because that's something you see with alcohol. And it's interesting to see those two products sort of categorised together. Another says, this was a brilliant article and thank you for giving it further coverage. My ability to breastfeed was taken away from me quite abruptly when my little fella was only 5 weeks old, because I needed emergency surgery for an abdominal condition, and I still found myself trying to justify why I was whipping out a formula bottle to feed him in the few months afterwards, just in case anyone thought I hadn't tried to breastfeed first. He thrived on formula and I never again wondered, was he getting enough? Absolutely, says another, I had little or no support while in the maternity hospital with help to breastfeed. It was my preferred choice. I was also judged by many women who bottle fed and didn't like my choice. Do we still have the lowest rate of breastfeeding in the world? And if so, why? Perhaps it goes back to the Catholic Church ruling in the 20th century Ireland. Why are we way behind other countries with postnatal care? And yeah, I think that ultimately, whatever your choice is, that has to feature heavily. Maternal mental health and paternal mental health in that. And you know, the importance of feeding our babies. So as I've already said, there's a lot of judgment out there. So maybe we should all try and just be a little bit more understanding. You can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, Emer Daly joins me in studio now with all the latest in health and wellness news. And you were just the ray of sunshine this world needs. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much. That's such a lovely compliment to receive on a Sunday morning.
And you are running the mini marathon later today.
I am jamming it all into the one day health and wellness news in the morning, running the mini marathon in the afternoon. Keep up with me.
And then yoga, you know, Monday, Tuesday to stretch out those limbs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just spinning all the plates, Claire. You get it though.
Yes, I have many, many crashing to the ground, but many still spinning. Let's get into it then, because you've got an interesting new report about stress levels in young adults in Ireland.
Yeah, this is a story I can definitely relate with. So Lloyd's Pharmacy have conducted a survey and have found that almost half of 25 to 34 year olds in Ireland are reporting high stress levels. And that's particularly seen in the Leinster area. So, I mean, that's no surprise. Like this cohort of people, like they're constantly battling decision-making time, their career, cost of living, you know, if they're getting married, if they're having kids, and their stress levels are really, really high. So that's 30% of the overall population feeling stressed. A really good news that did come from this study was also that kind of the ages of 65 plus have been seen to not feel so stressed, and they deal with stress really, really well. And I think we've often seen quotes like, the older you get, the less stressed you are. So that's obviously really, really good news to come from this. But it's nice to highlight that, you know, the ages of 25 to 34, they are feeling really, really stressed, and we need to look at that.
And I do often think about what's going on in the world and what's being reported in the news at the time you're setting your life up and how important that is. Like when I left school in the 90s, it was all, you know, you can be whatever you want to be. We were heading into the Celtic Tiger era. The Spice Girls were saying, look at us, we're ordinary people, and here we are touring the world. And they were the kind of images that were being blasted into our eyes. Yeah. Now it's a very different picture, and it can be quite dark, and it can be talk of cost of living crisis and, you know, housing crisis. That is going to get in on your own personal spinning plates.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. And I think, look, it's really nice to touch on that, but obviously, like, talking to other people that are like, even for myself, when I talk to my friends and stuff, I feel so much better about it. But other really great stats and trends came from this report as well. So we're seeing that pharmacists are almost as influential as going to our GPs. And I really like this one. And that's kind of the power of social media there playing a part, I'd say. You know, pharmacists are putting up on their social media maybe things that they'd recommend for balancing out our well-being or our sleep or stress and things like that. And 70% of people are prioritising their rest over exercise. So that's really nice to see as well. Time and time again, we've heard on this show, sleep is so important, and we can't really function without a good night's sleep.
Yeah, it's great, because the pharmacy can be the centre of the community, and it is a great place to start when you're looking for information and advice on your health and well-being. And I do often think as well in these surveys that even though it seems like a very negative thing that people are saying they're feeling stressed, it's actually a positive that they're recognising it, and maybe they're more well-versed on how to manage it and help it that little bit better. We have International Men's Health Week coming up this month.
We do. So that is happening from the 10th to the 16th of June. So it actually ends on Father's Day, which is really, really nice. But the HSE and Men's Health Forum have put on this campaign for a few years now. And it's really to just recognise again and bring our awareness to men's health. So men aren't a fan of going to the GP, and they often go to the GP at maybe crisis point or when, you know, their backup is up against the wall. So this is to really raise awareness, to really check in with our health when it comes to men's health, prioritise kind of good lifestyle things, get men talking. And the campaign this year, the theme is Know Your Numbers. So that comes to knowing your blood pressure, your BMI, your weight, really know your stats about yourself when it comes to male health. And I think females are really good at doing this because we've heard things like cycle syncing and really knowing our body that bit better. But we don't really hear that kind of stuff when it comes to men's health. So we need to just really encourage men to know more about their health.
And like we were saying with the stress, you know, checking in with your friends and the people around you is really important. And I think it's really important in health as well. Mm-hmm. That if you're saying, how are you, that you really answer, honestly, you know, I'm feeling a bit more tired than usual, or, you know, I'm a bit worried about something. I think it's really important because women are all about this. We sit down with a cup of tea, with a glass of wine, and, you know, everything's out on the table. Yeah. And, you know, I hope that that's changing a little bit now among men's circles too.
I think it definitely is. And some of the initiatives, and if anybody wants more information on Men's Health Week, they can head over to the HSE. But some of the things you can do is run activities in your local community. So around men's health, maybe it could be a 5K run. If it's in the workplace, maybe get a specialist in when it comes to men's health, and just really bring your awareness to how we can be talking about it that bit more.
They can also dance. I believe dance is your next story. The most effective exercise for depression, stretching benefits and more.
Yes. Like when I read this headline, I was just like, dancing is a cure for everything. So this was a recent study by the BMJ. And this brought a group of people together to kind of try out different forms of exercise and how beneficial each of them was. And dancing was seen to be very beneficial for our mental health. So what we were seeing there is it's not just the form of dancing. It's, you know, learning a dance routine, being around a group of people. It's really boosting our cognitive skills, our social skills, and it's boosting our overall well-being, kind of trying out something new. And it does have that fun element to it. So, yeah, it was a really nice one to see here.
It's really pushing yourself outside your comfort zone, though, isn't it? I mean, we all would like to think that we could have the moves, but often that's not the case. Now, you've gone along to a dance class with your mom. What were you doing? The cha-cha?
I had a feeling you were going to bring this one up. Yes, my mom has started salsa dancing, and I swear to God, she's done a full 360. Salsa dancing has changed her life. The community, they have parties once a month. She goes Mondays and Wednesday nights, and she is salsa-ing her way into good vibes.
I love that. How did you feel doing it?
I mean, I went the one time, and I think that'll be the only time, but I had so much fun. It was just, there was so much going on, and yeah, look, hats off to everyone who tries new things.
And outside of kind of the classroom setting, I think sometimes if we go out and have a good night where there is a dance floor, be it a wedding, be it a nightclub, be it a concert, and you get to that sort of flow state where you've kind of forgotten what time it is. And I don't mean this has to be alcohol induced, but to kind of lose it in that way and not care who's watching you or what way you're moving, like that's got to be good for you.
That has to be good. And I'm always the first one up on a dance floor. But I think what took me by surprise at the salsa class was actually having to learn a routine. I was just like, nah, that's all a bit too much for me. I just want to freestyle. So any form of dancing is good for you.
And the British Medical Journal say so. Now, your final story today is about plastic bottles. And as somebody who constantly has a water bottle by her side, I am listening with an eager ear.
That is why I brought the story to your attention. You are an advocate for bringing your own bottle. Yeah, so I brought this one here today because obviously it's coming into the summer. We might just be out a bit more, grabbing a plastic water bottle in the shops or whatever it is. But the more that we're reusing that plastic water bottle, the worse it's becoming for us. Plastic water bottles are a one and done situation and they should be recycled straight after. We shouldn't be washing them out, reusing them again, because every time we do, more chemicals are coming from the plastic into the water each time. And you might leave a plastic water bottle maybe sitting in the front seat of the car or sitting by the window and the sunlight's getting into it, and that's actually producing more chemicals into the water each time. And you can even notice when you drink from it, there's a bit of a weird taste. You know, it doesn't taste like fresh water. That is because you're drinking almost like a chemical soup, and it's just not good for us, especially for women. It's been seen to have hormone imbalance throughout. So definitely, if you can, get yourself a stainless steel bottle, carry around a bottle with you. You'll find yourself drinking more water and you're doing something better for the environment. You might think you're doing something good, kind of reusing a plastic water bottle, but really you're not.
I think, you know, I always have my own water bottle. That's really important to me. I'm really trying to reduce single-use plastic use as much as I can. But I often wonder about the germs involved in this bottle, because I do tend to just refill it and go. And I don't know, is it 3 months before I give it a proper wash and clean? So, you know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. But I think ultimately, this is better.
I think definitely having your own water bottle is better. You know, boil the kettle, rinse it out. I don't know, once a week maybe.
Yes,
try
doing
it every day. But Yeah, like, look how much care we give to babies' bottles. Like, we're literally sterilizing them every single time they use them. I think that's how we should be probably, maybe not so much, but treating our own as well.
Yeah, hot soapy water, you know, kills most germs. Yeah. So that's all we need to do. Right, must do better. I have what I need to do going forward into June. Thank you very much. Where can people find you, Emer?
You can find me at Daily Wellbeing on Instagram. I am doing some yoga classes, I have a podcast, and I just love to meet new people. So get in touch.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, Dr. Gabor Maté is coming to Dublin's RDS on June 20th. And in this one-day immersive workshop, he, along with many other thought leaders in the area of mental health, will explore healing trauma and reconsidering your understanding of health and well-being. Jacqueline Kine is organising the event and she joins me in studio now. Jacqueline, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Claire. It's a pleasure to be here.
So this is your first big event and my God, are you going big? I mean, Dr. Gabor Maté is one of the biggest thought leaders when it comes to healing from trauma in the world, world renowned.
He is. And I felt that Ireland was really ready to have someone like him. And we were together last year on retreat and he mentioned that he was coming to Belfast for a trauma summit and he hadn't been to Dublin in a long time. And I said, this is an opportunity for Ireland and we're ready. We're ready to have him here. And I really feel that it's a gift to bring him. So many people need his work and his time with us. It was a real pleasure.
And he was very open to coming. I mean, he's an 80-year-old man. To think that he is still doing full-day workshops. I mean, I don't want to be ageist at all. I just think it's really impressive that he still feels the call. He's a best-selling author. He's been a very successful medical professional. But he does feel that this is his mission in life.
It is. And I think that that really, when I sat and spoke with him, I felt that our mission together is very much aligned. And that was really the call for me to bring him here because he cares very much. And he hasn't stopped and he's continuing really to spread his word and spread his work.
And you have set up the Kine Foundation. So this is going to be more of an area in which you are going to work. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so the Kine Foundation is in the process right now of being set up. I'll be working alongside my husband, David, and we will be focusing on youth mental health in Ireland and education and working with education in Africa. My husband spent many years working with the Gates Foundation and working in Uganda. He recently took a group of TY boys, eight boys and eight dads, on a humanitarian expedition. They didn't have phones for 10 days. They were really on the ground doing the work, and this is his passion. And we're really just bringing together what we both love and care about, and that is looking after people, really.
And you said you feel like Ireland is ready now. So do you think there's been a shift? I mean, Ireland definitely knows trauma, and I suppose before, historically, things would be brushed under the carpet and now things are a bit more out in the open. Is that what you were alluding to?
Yeah, absolutely. I moved here just about 9 years ago. And at the time I was studying with Shefali Sabari, who teaches something called conscious parenting. She's really the catalyst for this event to even happen. So I have to give a shout out to say thank you to her because I've been following her work for a long time. And when I first moved over, she said, are you ready to share conscious parenting? Are you ready to teach? And when I would bring it up and I would talk to people and say, we need to look at our own self in our parenting, I would be met with, what are you talking about? You know, it wasn't a conversation. So I kind of kept it to myself and I'd fly back to the States really to do this work. And I have friends from all over the world that are conscious parent coaches, those who've trained with Gabor to keep that conversation. And it's just in the last few years that I'm able to have conversations like this here in Ireland. And that's where I felt it was time that I can actually, the level of appreciation, the letters that I've received of how Gabor has touched people's lives makes me realize how grateful I am to be doing this work, be bringing him here, because it really is, I feel, a gift for so many people. And I feel like, yeah, so that's why I feel that people are ready.
And there is a bit of an overlap in sort of Dr. Shefali's work and Dr. Gabor Maté's work in that it's bringing that self-awareness and recognizing that our pasts often inform are present. And that's not to be said with any judgment. And I think people kind of get a bit fearful of, if I start digging, who knows what's going to happen? But they don't realise that we're kind of carrying it anyway. You may as well take it off your back and have a look in the backpack and see if you can lighten the load a little bit. What are some of the things you've heard from people?
Yeah, I mean, I think really when I look at it, it's we all have, you know, Gabor talks about small trauma, small T's and big T's. We all are one, really. When I look at you, when I look at me as parents, everyone has something that maybe they're a perfectionist. I know for myself, my own childhood comes back into play. So I want to be the perfect mom. Or you're working too hard and you're a workaholic because you don't want to look within. But really, everyone has something, and it's nothing to be afraid of. And the more that we can actually look within and look at one another and say, we're in this together. You know, there's a mental health crisis here in Ireland with the youth, and that's where my passion is. I was working with retreats, and I've been in corporate well-being for many years, and really looking at the need right now, it's if we don't come together and look within, how do we change the trajectory around mental health? And it's nothing to be afraid of. It's actually a beautiful journey when you actually start to see, oh, wow, you know, my little child is having a temper tantrum, and instead of me being present with my child, I'm quieting my child because there's another parent on the playground looking at me like I'm the worst mom. So that was the greatest gift that Dr. Shefali gave me, was to not put on my children my own unmet needs as a child. I wasn't heard. I wasn't seen. I had to quiet myself. It's even my own self. I lost my voice in some ways because my mom had a big personality. My mom was very strong. And she would, at times I would feel like I couldn't speak up. So now I feel like at this point in my life, I really feel more comfortable because of the work that I've done with Gabor and many others that I hope to bring to Ireland in the future.
And look at you now. You're going to be up on the stage in the RDS.
With you, I couldn't think of someone better to be hosting and emceeing this event. Honestly, your heart is beautiful. You are genuine. You care about this work as much as I do. And it's an absolute pleasure to have you with me.
And I'll give you a good hug before you head on the stage and set you on
your
way.
I'm all about the hugs. I was just on a journey walking the Camino with my 16-year-old son, and the hugs, I was going slow and peaceful and hugs, and I had friends with me and they're like, oh God, not the hugs. And by the end, I converted one of my dear friends into a hugger. So,
and it is obviously multidisciplinary when it comes to mental health. Some people will require professional care, they will require medication, perhaps they will require speaking and working with a medical professional for long periods of time. But there is such power in shining a light within and getting more of an understanding of our own behaviours. It doesn't mean we get it right all the time, but it always really fascinates me how sometimes, I always describe it as shining that torch, just seems to dissipate the power that had over you. It seems so simple, and yet it's so powerful.
It is.
Because, you know, people think surely that won't be enough. What will I get out of a day like that? So tell them what to expect.
Yeah, so it's a full day event. Gabor will be on for sessions in the morning, sessions in the afternoon. But really one of the things that is remarkable is that we have two charity partners. As I was talking, this is part of the foundation. The aspect of the foundation is really to pay it forward. So you're there for this experience. There'll be music. We have Brezzy coming to play a piece. He's going to be part of a panel. We also have Dennis Oquera, who to me is one of the most aligned, beautiful humans, who is a refugee from northern Uganda. He made it to London. He's now a well-known model, actor, activist, philanthropist, humanitarian. And he's just as equally, people will just love hearing from him, because what he did is he basically took all of his money and started a foundation called the Lemule Foundation in northern Uganda, and he is rebuilding his own community. And that is my real hope, is that we come together on that day and people start to think about we. Instead of I, it's how can we collaborate? That is my true passion, is to really help people to see we are one, and to actually move the needle around mental health we have to come together. We can't wait for policies to change. We can't wait for everything to be perfect. It's how can we collaborate? How can the corporations to take responsibility for the youth of the future? So yeah, it's going to be a really phenomenal day. I'm very, very excited to welcome everyone.
And that's the full circle moment. And that's something that I love about it, that the more you strengthen yourself, the more you can sort of give. And so not only have you set up the foundation, you've got the charity end to that rather than a profit-making entity. You also have a pay it forward ticketing system, which I think is lovely, because often workshops like this can be really expensive because there is a lot of cost involved in putting something like this on. And often then it goes to corporates because they can afford the prices. And I'm not saying that people working in corporate don't need to think about their mental health or get access to this, but you want to make sure it's accessible for all.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I think early on in my life that I learned from my dad was really to look after other people and money not being the bottom line. And for me, having an element of paying it forward is really important. It's something that I practice on a day-to-day basis, whether it's buying a cup of coffee for somebody or, you know, in any way, buying flowers, buying somebody groceries behind me. It's something that I wanted to really bring into the event. So we have tickets that are pay it forward tickets. We've had many people purchase these tickets for people that have written in. We had a scholarship application. Unfortunately, it is now closed. We had so many applicants, so many incredible, beautiful stories. I'll have to bring Gabor back again next year so that everyone can actually participate in this event. And maybe next year we have more involvement from different sectors, because at this point right now, I'm basically organizing the whole event. So yeah, it's really beautiful and special.
And tickets are going really well. There are still some available. Where can people find out more?
Yeah, we have limited tickets left at jacquelinekine.com. That's JACQUELINEKYNE.com.
Okay, brilliant. Well, really looking forward to the day. You know, as I always say with this job, I become a listener or an audience member as much as I ever am a host. So yeah, it would be a very special day to be a part of. And thank you so much for having me and for coming on to tell us a little bit more about it. And that website again is jacquelinekine.com/GaborMate to find out about that event in Dublin's RDS on June 20th. Jacqueline Kine, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Claire. It was such a pleasure.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, Cara O'Loughlin is a life coach, a yoga teacher and intuitive eating counsellor. She specialises in food and body freedom from disordered eating. She offers one-to-one coaching to individuals, schools, workplace and group settings, and teaches people how to heal their relationship with food and their body, and also how to raise intuitive eaters. Now, I'll have to give a trigger warning. We will be discussing eating disorders and disordered eating. But Cara, you are very welcome.
Hi, Claire. Thank you for having me.
And it's a personal story that has led you to this. It was your own experience in life. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That's right. So when I was 15, my mum passed away. And literally that night, I took up my first eating disorder behaviours. I think it was the trauma and it was the kind of lack of security that I then had in my life, thinking like my main caretaker is gone, you know. So from that night onwards, I controlled what I put into my body. It was the only way I could feel secure in the world. So that went on for from kind of junior cert level or age until I was about 22 and I entered my first recovery. I actually went to treatment over in Canada, but my dad wasn't mad on me being so far away. So I came home and then I went into a place called the Rutland Centre here in Dublin. At that time, like it's 20 years ago, you know, they were more focused on people with problems with alcohol and drugs. So there was one of us in there with food. And then sometimes there was a cross between the alcohol and food with others. But I recovered there, or I thought I recovered. And then I went traveling and it just kept coming back. Like I knew that I wasn't free from it. So I went to a place in Dublin called the Merino Therapy Centre, and they were phenomenal, absolutely brilliant. And again, I recovered, but then I started having babies. So I was told for about 10 years that I couldn't conceive because I had no cycle from the age of 15 to 29. So it was a really tough time, those 15 years. you know, I really wanted to have kids. It was something so important to me, but I struggled with anorexia, with bulimia through exercise, and then it went into binge eating. And then every time I decided I had a child, and I was really, really blessed that, you know, we were able to conceive really easily. I didn't have to go through any treatments. I did go to Hollis Street, and I went to the private clinic there, and they did just tell me to eat a Mars bar, basically. So they kind of had said that you just need to gain a little bit of weight. If you gain some weight, let's bring you back and see how it goes. And sure, I fell pregnant. But on each child that I had, it's like the eating disorder raised its ugly head, and that kind of comparison. And, you know, I always say, like, I recovered in a body, in a certain body, but I didn't recover in a pregnant body, and I didn't recover in a postpartum body, you know. So we have three kids of 9, 6, and 3. And when I had my second of 6, I decided I had to go back into recovery, and I decided I can't do this again. I cannot have, you know, the rest of my life. I don't want to get to 80 or to 90 and think, like, what did I just wasted so much of my life and have so much regrets. I saw people who were living a free life, not a recovered life, but a fully free life. So when we found out we were pregnant on our third, my husband, like, nearly ran out the door. You know, I was delighted secretly because, one, I was able to leave a job that I'd been teaching in a secondary school after 11 years. It was kind of my excuse. But I also knew I want to try again. I want to have a baby where I'm going to raise that child as an intuitive eater. And I found intuitive eating, and I worked with my own life coach who I work with now. We don't talk about anything food, anything exercise, that's gone. But I just wanted another chance to have a child and be fully free. So that was 4 years ago.
So are you able to sit in front of me now and say, I am recovered for the first time, or do you still sort of leave it open because you've said this before and not known? Has a change come about?
Yeah, like 100%, you know, because I think the intuitive eating was the icing on the cake for me. I was delving so much into my past all the time with the disordered eating, but actually I needed to move from that. And that's what coaching would be really about, is that what is going on now in my life in this moment that doesn't serve me for my future, rather than going back into the past. So that's what I needed. My coach sat down with me when I went to my recovery in Marina therapy. Again, they were phenomenal, but it was all about taking away the exercise and taking, you know, following a plan. But there was no intuition. There was no listening to myself. Like, I grew up on a sports field. I was so into sports, you know, that was my thing. My sisters might have been drama or music. But to take away any form of exercise from me just meant that I wasn't able to find what feels right, you know. So the first question my coach asked me, and I actually recovered with her and then I went back, is she said, well, what feels right for you? What do you love to do? And I was like, oh my God, for the first time since I was 17, somebody's asked me what I want. And that's when, you know, I started to recover from me, and I found intuitive eating. And, like, as you know, I've been teaching yoga for so long, but I connected with it not about a weight loss thing and not about a toning way, but actually about how is this making me connect to my body and helping me feel.
And it's so important, and so many of us lose our way with that, because I often think one of the reasons, and I know it's nuanced, it's complex, it's multifaceted, but one of the things I often think is the health message, because we're kind of sold that it has to be restrictive and punishing, and you know, that cycle of starting on Monday, and you know, that kind of beating yourself up for how you behaved at the weekend and the good and bad. And that cycle can be very difficult to break because it's everywhere. It's like the water we're swimming in.
Absolutely. But I think if, you know, what I always say to people is it working? Like, look at society, you know, obesity is higher than it's ever been. So, I mean, are these messages working? When they say, and I don't love throwing out this statistic, but 95% plus of diets fail. So they are meant to fail us. Like, in America, it's a $9 billion industry, the diet industry. And that goes with, you know, all of the different, I don't even want to talk about the labels, but for example, keto, intermittent fasting, you know, all of these different labels and fads, 95% failure rate, but we keep going back, you know. I remember reading before, there's a brilliant book for raising intuitive eaters by a lady called Summer Brook. And she said, if a doctor was to give us medicine like a diet, and we knew there was a 95% failure rate, would we take it? No, we wouldn't, you know. So like, intuitive eating is about coming back to our natural hunger, our natural feelings of fullness and our taste preferences. We had it as kids. So you have kids as well. So think about your baby when you were either giving them the bottle or the boob. They would literally turn their face or cry or spit out if they had enough. We weren't still trying, well, sometimes if we were trying to control what they were eating, we'd be still trying to put it in their mouth. But after a while, you'd realize it's completely futile. They're full. They don't want it anymore. So what has happened to us is our environment has shaped us. We start to listen to everything external, what we should do. You know, the size of our bodies is wrong. So we should go on a diet. And all we do is come away from our own natural hunger, fullness and taste preferences.
And I think people have in many ways a misunderstanding of what an eating disorder looks like. They sort of see the stereotypical picture. And that's not to say that isn't somebody with an eating disorder, because it is. But how endemic do you think disordered eating is in our everyday?
Well, like, again, statistically, there's 3% in Ireland that have an eating disorder. But I would argue that there's probably 80% with disordered eating. Like, there's very few people, and think in your life as well, that you know that aren't either yo-yo dieting or have never been on a diet. I have to say, my husband has never been. And it's amazing to be married to somebody like that. I think he really pushed me into freedom, because I thought, how is he able to be there and, thrash a bag of nuts and then a bar of dark chocolate and go to a spin class and come home and have dinner? Like, it was phenomenal. It's phenomenal watching him. But the thing is, he is so intuitive. You know, he will stop when he's full and he'll eat when he's hungry. And I thought, well, if he has that, why can't I? If the reason I got disordered eating in the first place is not to do with the food itself, it was about control. And the sickest people actually with disordered eating do not look like they have an eating disorder. They don't live in a very slim body. It's actually their bloods. So yo-yo dieting is probably one of the most dangerous things we can do for our health.
And for our mental health, because it's just that cycle of trying and failing and feeling like you're letting yourself down. And you kind of do it in isolation. Mm-hmm. You just do it to yourself and you don't really ask for the help. Tell me about raising your third child as an intuitive eater, because that's almost like a little science experiment.
It's so funny you say that, because last week I had a talk and it was just brilliant. Do you know when I was so nervous, but I was up there and I was like, this is what I'm meant to be doing. You know, I got the disordered eating or the eating disorder for a reason, and it's to teach other people. So he is a rubbish eater. Like, this is why this is the best, you know, I actually said last week, he's my best science experiment. I controlled the two girls. Not that I controlled how much they were eating, but I really restricted sugar. I was afraid of sugar. You know, I had orthorexia myself, which means an obsession with clean eating. That was probably my hardest to kick. And in this kind of society, you know, we're living in a wellness culture. I work in a wellness culture. It is very hard to kind of kick that clean eating perfectionism around food. But I really limited their sugar. And I'll never forget, our second Abby was on a beach with a friend. And if she's listening, I'll even be mortified, because I've never said it to her. But she had Pringles, green Pringles and the jellies and everything. And Abby was hankering over. I mean, she didn't leave the woman alone for the whole time on the beach. And I was thinking, why aren't they in the sea? Why aren't they climbing rocks? She was so obsessed with the food because she didn't get it at home that I thought, I'm doing her a disservice. So this is not about the food. I'm actually doing her the disservice. So Finn now is 3 and he's very selective. I'd rather say selective than fussy. But I know that it's not a problem to be fixed. And I know it's a stage, because our 6-year-old went through it. Our 9-year-old will generally eat most things, but she didn't when she was younger. So in terms of raising them, I don't put any pressure in terms of food. So let's say we're sitting around the dinner table and I had to teach my husband this. We'd be eating a curry, okay? And I know some people with selective eaters will say, oh my God, my child would never eat a curry. There's certain things Finn won't eat. And in the past, Shane would have said, you know, have one more bite. You haven't finished. Sure, they've barely eaten it. Whereas now it's, has your tummy had enough? yes. Do you not actually like it? No, I don't really like it. Would you like something else? So I generally prepare on the table something that they will like. Let's say it's white rice, pasta, a bowl of fruit, some veg. People might think, Jesus, that takes an awful lot of time. It doesn't. It takes 10 minutes in a few pretty little bowls. What I know now is there is absolutely no big deal if he doesn't have a protein at dinner. That's very much the culture that we're living in as well. If he has a couple of bits of pasta, some veg, whatever, I'm happy because it's only one meal, you know, and we'll try again the next day. He eats a lot more than a lot of people out there, but he doesn't eat less than 10 foods. And that's when a parent should worry and go seek dietitian help. But otherwise, he's three. He's exercising his control like I did at 15. He'll even do it with a jumper. So it's not a problem to be fixed. I stand back and I let them choose and them understand when they're hungry and when they're full.
So what would you say to somebody who is listening to this now? They're either driving in the car or they've got us in their headphones on their walk and they're like, I'm stuck in a cycle of yo-yo dieting. That sounds like me.
Yeah.
What is their first step?
Work with me. Okay, so there's a wonderful book called Intuitive Eating by Evelyn Tribbley and Elise Resch. These two ladies were the people who came up with intuitive eating in 1995. There is, like, it's backed by evidence. There are hundreds of studies on intuitive eating and how powerful it is. So first of all, I'd read that book. It's absolutely brilliant. They have a workbook. I think they're in their fourth edition in 25,000 languages. So it's not a fad, you know, and people... The one thing I'd say about people with yo-yo dieting is that 85% of what our body looks like is genetics. And sometimes people have to allow that to sink in. Okay, yes, we can work with, you know, our movement in terms of toning and all of those kind of things. But 85% of our bone structure, our body shape and size is genetics. So sometimes it's quite futile what we're doing, trying to push ourselves into a smaller body. I would say to the person that, what do you want to be like when you're 90? Do you want to have regrets of everything that you've missed out on just because you were trying to fit into a body that you weren't going to anyway genetically? And then I would definitely say that intuitive eating, the first thing is to put weight loss on the back burner. It can happen for some people and for others it won't, depending on how much binge eating and dieting is going on.
Yeah, but ultimately to have that target of a good relationship with food and your body, I mean, absolutely, the freedom in that.
Yeah.
Is so, so powerful. And yeah, from that platform, perhaps you can move into mm-hmm. going to a gym or weight loss might be part of your future. Mm-hmm. But it has to come from a more solid foundation and something that's better for your mental health ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like it's not a diet, it's a framework. And it's a framework to help reconnect people with their innate hunger and fullness levels like we did when we were young kids before we were conditioned by the environment. So one of the steps will be gentle movement and gentle nutrition. So when people think intuitive eating, God, I'm just going to eat crap all day, like crap in inverted commas, you're not. But there is a certain stage, like the first kind of 1 to 4 steps, it is about giving unconditional permission to eat all types of food. I really struggled with that. I'd say I was in that stage for a good year. And it was hard to trust, but I had to keep on reading the books. Also, another thing I say is podcasts are so powerful. Like I listen to these podcasts every day so that it can help with my clients. Life After Diets is phenomenal with I Am Stephanie Michelle on Instagram and Sarah, the binge eating therapist. So that's Life After Diets. There's Lift the Shame is a beautiful podcast for kids. She's a dietitian, Crystal Cargaze, over in the States. So if you, I would say to people, clean up your feed. You know, if you're following people that are all focused on weight loss and protein and all these kind of fad things that were being sold, then maybe start to follow more people in the body positivity and intuitive eating field.
And what about you now, Cara, then? Because you mentioned this sort of area of regret and looking mm-hmm. back on life. But I like how you reframed it, because it is very powerful to say, how do I want to look back at 90 on how I lived my life and how much of it do I want to have been thinking that my body was wrong or that I was, you know, having a disordered relationship with my food yeah. and my body. I like how you reframed the time you spent with an eating disorder and disordered eating of up to perhaps 25 years, mm-hmm. that this was all leading you here to yeah. work now with others.
Yeah, like it took me 5 years to leave the school, you know, and I always say that in my coaching is that it was the fear of the lack of security and will I succeed? And I think we all have imposter syndrome. Coming here today, I was like, oh my God, I'm bricking it, you know, but then it just flows because you feel like you're living your purpose. Like I often think that my mom is looking down at me and saying she is going to help people, or even if it's only my kids, you know, to not have to live the kind of years that I did, you know. And I mean, it is genetic. It is sad. There is a genetic quality to a disordered eating. But I just think that we're living in a society now where we're all comparing. Our phones are just a click away. I didn't have that growing up. We just weren't allowed to buy magazines when I was recovering. So it's really important to have these talks in school to remind people that the least important thing about them is their body. And actually, one thing I'll say is that after all the kids and after all the years, my body has always stayed at the same size. And that can be, that's to help people who are freaked out by the yo-yo diet and the intuitive eating. Your body will stay at its natural set point, or in or above, in or around it by a couple of pounds, if you just listen to it. You know, I can't change the way my genetics were. Neither can you, neither can the next person. But there is a step in intuitive eating about respecting and accepting the body we've been given.
And if people do want to find out more and perhaps work with you, where can they find you?
So I'm livingintuitively.ie is my website, www.livingintuitively.ie. My Instagram handle is at livingintuitively with Cara. And I have loads of different events because I teach so much yoga. I do a lot of yoga weekend retreats and monthly day retreats, classes. And I teach, or I work with people one-to-one. But also if anybody wants like a talk for a secondary school, I don't suggest primary schools because I don't want to open a can of worms that may not have been opened yet. But for secondary schools, that's a great one to start with.
Fantastic. Yeah. Cara O'Loughlin, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Claire, for having me.
And as with any changes to your diet, you should always make an appointment with your GP. So that's it for Alive and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aidan McKelvey, and to Hugo Da Silva Scott, who was on sound. And thanks to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.